I like beer.
It makes me a jolly good fellow.
I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
We are going to celebrate Wisconsin beer during this Independence Day edition of Tell Joy Where to Go. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy 4th of July. Will you be enjoying a cold one during your 4th of July picnic later today? What is your favorite Wisconsin beer? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We will learn about some of the newest trends in craft brewing, including wild fermented sour beers, nano breweries, the use of locally grown hops, new summer brews, and Wisconsin beer destinations, some travel ideas for this summer. We are very happy to have back with us the Beer Here columnist for the Isthmus newspaper in Madison, Robin Shepherd. Robin is also the writer of the Searching for the Perfect Pint travel series of state beer books. He's also an associate professor in the Department of Life Sciences Communication at UW-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning.
And happy 4th of July to you.
And same to you.
I understand that beer has some patriotic origins.
Well, when you think about it, you go back a little bit in U.S. history to our founding fathers. Many were avid beer drinkers, beer consumers. George Washington was known for, as commander in chiefs, that he proclaimed that each of his troops would receive a quart of beer a day in their rations.
Oh my goodness!
Thomas Jefferson had a brewery at Monticello. We have James Madison, who actually was an advocate of a secretary of beer for the cabinet. It sounds ridiculous, but if you think about it, at the time, that would have been an incredible way to raise revenue during the early part of the country's founding. And then there are others more notable, FDR, obviously, for the repeal of Prohibition and the return of beer across the country. Jimmy Carter has an interesting place in beer history because he signed the laws that changed that really are credited with allowing us to be able to brew beer at home, and that triggered the whole renaissance of the small local brewery. Jimmy Carter was not really a beer drinker himself, but we all know his brother Billy was another story.
Yeah, the Billy Beer or whatever that was, yeah.
Yes, it was quite popular. In fact, Billy Beer was made up until a few years ago over in Cold Spring, Minnesota, as a contract beer. And then our current president, Mr. Obama, has used it in beer diplomacy, if you recall.
The Beer Summit.
There you go.
Yeah. So lots of beer is a patriotic thing. There we go. Are you going to be having a beer at your 4th of July picnic, Robin?
Not just a beer, probably more than one.
what type of beer do you think you might have?
Well, you know, the 4th of July, I pay tribute to the brewers of the past with usually kind of right now the retro trend. So I love to kind of think back about what beers my father liked, or, you know, in history a little bit, what beers were popular that may have gone out of style that have come back. You know, you can kind of think about the labels here, Pabst Blue Ribbon. Yeah. You know, those are always fun beers for me. While you can probably guess I'm not enamored by their taste, there's just something about the 4th of July, maybe even a canned beer kind of thing that just kind of goes with the outdoor theme. I'm very big into Potosi these days. The last several weeks, the American Brewiana Association held their convention in Dubuque in early June, and I was down for that, and it got me excited to kind of reminded me of the history associated with Potosi. So there's going to be some good old Potosi at our house this afternoon.
Wonderful. Well, I mentioned to you just before we went on air that I stopped at my local grocery store. This was a couple of weeks ago, and somebody from the Potosi Brewery was giving out samples, and also tickets to the National Brewery Museum, which is located there as well. And you just visited that a couple of weeks ago.
Right. It's, you know, it's on my list of summer destinations, and it's a reoccurring place that I like to go because there is the old brewery. Potosi was a brewery that started around 1852, I believe, and It made its way up to Prohibition, survived after Prohibition, and up until 1972, it actually made beer. In fact, Potosi, many folks have forgotten that it was our fifth largest brewery in the state at one time. And so it went dark in about 1972. The building was really vacant, dilapidated. It for all practical purposes, it probably should have been condemned and razed. And I remember being down there in about the late 1990s, where there was really no roof to the building. Local passionate people about beer wanted to revive that brewery, and so they collected funds themselves. And part of the deal was when they rebuilt the brewery as a brew pub, they also became the National Brewery Museum. And so beer has returned to Potosi, but when you go there, the upper floors of the old brewery have been renovated and restored beautifully. And the exhibits that are there are from people's homes and private collections. There's a whole culture associated with collecting beer advertising and brewery-ana. And private collectors will agree to display their own private collections there. So it's a museum with a constantly rotating array of things to see.
That sounds great, and that's on my summer travel list as well, because I've always, and that's such a pretty location too, on the Great River Road and all that. Yeah, so Potosi, I'm trying to remember, I can't remember the exact name of the sample that I had, but I think it was made in a cave.
Oh, there is cave ale, yes. And actually, the old caves there, part of the old caves, are still in existence. You can see them when you go in and do a tour of the old brewery.
It's not really made in the cave. They just gave it that name.
Well, it would have been made in the cave originally. Yeah. Today, no. It probably was fermented, in traditional fermenters that when you go to Potosi, you can actually see the copper vessels and the stainless steel that's used to ferment it. But one time, it would have been stored in a cave. Many of the old breweries, when you think about it, that's where they would have lagered and aged their beer, were in caves. For those of the people that are familiar with Milwaukee and Miller Brewing Company, when you tour the Plank Road Brewery, you can actually see the remnants of the caves that the Miller boys dug in the 1850s.
Sounds fascinating. And I did want to go back to your PBR nostalgia for just for a moment, too. My dad didn't drink beer very much, so I don't – but I – do remember PBR, and it really had a resurgence. You were hip if you were drinking PBR a while back. But then I saw a story in the news this year that some Wisconsin folks want to try to buy back the PBR name and start. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, a little bit. Yes. My beer friends are going to give me a hard time for talking a lot about Pabst Blue Ribbon with you, Joy. But it's an interesting story, because Pabst Blue Ribbon, if you think about the Pabst label overall, Pabst is one of the largest breweries in the U.S. that doesn't own its own brewery. It contracts with other breweries to make Pabst Blue Ribbon and its products. Pabst was once the icon of the skyline in Milwaukee, but really now it's sort of farmed out. I believe Miller has produced it more recently, at least in this region of the country. Pabst Blue Ribbon, it went through, once the company was sold, it almost went away until some savvy marketers decided, well, we can bring this back it was like the first wave of retro beers. Pabst and Slitz all kind of fit into that in terms of the Wisconsin genre of old beers. There was a fellow actually from the Twin Cities who at the time was, at that time in the early 2000s, Pabst was part of the Pearl family in San Antonio. And this fellow was hired by Pearl to really revive that label. And he did that. And about 4 or 5 years after we saw the ad campaign, you might have remembered it. It had PB Army ASAP. That was kind of the heart of that revival. He left Pearl Pabst and decided he was going to start his own company after he had kind of resurrected Pabst from the ashes and gave it a new lease on life. He now is the owner, the primary mover and shaker behind Bard's Tale, which is a gluten-free beer. Gluten-free beers are one of the fastest growing segments in the craft beer market right now. And Bard's Tale is made in New York, but it's distributed nationally. People have different takes on when you pick up a gluten-free beer, what you're looking for in taste. They often do not taste like a malt-based beer that we know in terms of the craft beer portfolio, but they can also be quite fun. And Bard's Tale is one of those kind of interesting success stories that you'll see nationally marketed for gluten-free. Locally, we have New Grist from Lakefront, and then a new brewery that's starting up here in Madison, Greenview Alt. Very small batches, mind you, but in a few local restaurants in the Madison area, we'll carry that.
We will talk about some other of the trends in craft brewing during this hour. We're going to talk mainly about Wisconsin's fabulous craft brew industry, and we will welcome your questions for our guest, Robin Shepherd. We'll welcome your favorite Wisconsin craft brews. What will you have at your 4th of July cookout or picnic? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Beer.
We are talking about beer, Wisconsin craft beer. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Robin Shepherd. He is the Beer Here columnist for the Isthmus newspaper of Madison, the writer of the Searching for the Perfect Pint Travel series of state beer books, and he's here to talk with us about different trends in the craft brew industry in Wisconsin, talking about some new summer releases, and welcoming your questions about Wisconsin beers. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I know we have a lot of people posting on Facebook, and we'll share some of those comments, and we welcome your calls as well. But let's talk, Robin, about the most recent column I saw that you wrote for the Isthmus. It was about the new Glarus brewery and its, I guess, new batch of sour beers. What's a sour beer?
Well, it's the latest, greatest wave, I think, taking over the hearts, minds, and taste buds of craft beer enthusiasts. Over the last maybe 10 years or so, we've seen a crescendo in the interest for all things hop. Hops give it the beer its bitterness. And in the last couple of years in particular, the trend shifting, not necessarily completely away from that, but in your quest for, you know, full flavors and lots of interesting things, you know, the beer people are kind of nomads. They're always on to the next great thing, whatever's mm-hmm. new on the list. And the craze right now are beers that have tart, sourness to it. And if you think about this, for those that are a little older in drinking, we often thought of sour beers as bad beers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thing today is, no, that's not necessarily the case. Brewers are really creative in the way they're achieving levels of sourness and the types of sourness. And they're generally beers that are fermented with either wild yeast or bacteria. So the same type of sourness that you find in yogurts and cheeses, lactobacillus, is a souring agent. So that's introduced to beer. What's fascinating is that the breweries like New Glarus, Oso, Central Waters, they have sour beer programs now. And because of the nature of the way the beer is, the science side of this, often those breweries have to have isolated areas within their brewery to do this. They don't want the main production lines to become infected. You know, if you think about the modern production brewery, we have really engineered that around cleanliness and to stop outside infiltration from wild yeast or bacteria. Well, the craze of sourness is now to reintroduce that back in, and so you'll see separate facilities merging up within a brewery to handle their sour program. And if you're a staffer or a brewer, once you work in the sour area, you're probably not allowed to go back into the main production area that day because of fear for contamination.
Oh.
So New Glarus is one of the really fascinating success stories overall. Anyone in the Midwest that follows craft beer has heard of Dan and Deb Carey and the wonderful gem that they have down in New Glarus, where they have their older production facility, which is often referred to as the Riverside Brewery, and that's where they actually started in 1993, a smaller brew house. And about 7 years ago, they created a brand new production brewery on a hill that overlooks New Glarus. That that's quite a facility. It was in excess of $20 million to build that. But they kept their old facility. And over the last 2 or 3 years, Dan Carey has been reinvesting in that older brewery to be his place where he does sour beers. And he calls it the Sour Fruit Cave, or the Wild Fruit Cave. And when you go in typical architecture, they have really thought this through, where you actually walk into a building that's reminiscent of Belgium or Germany 200 years ago. And sour beers at that level are open fermented. So when you think of a production brewery today, stainless steel, the big mm-hmm. fermenters that are closed and tight, and all of the other controls, environmental controls that go with it. Sour beers at the scale that Dan Carey is making them now, he has what's called a cool chip, and it's just a large open stainless steel tub in its own room, and the beer, the wort, the sugar water is piped into that, and the windows are opened at night, and so whatever's in the air comes in and infects the beer.
Oh, my gosh.
And so what he's looking for there is, you know, wild local strains of yeast to kind of give it that localness to it. So his beers, I think over time, should all kind of have that similar type of sourness to it, because there'll be local organisms that he will kind of nurture in that building for that beer.
So, you know, I have to admit that sounds a little bit scary to me, but why, you've had this and, mm-hmm. and you like it. What's good about it?
Well, for craft beer followers, it is, mm-hmm. for me, it's always a scavenger hunt. I think whenever the brewers who know me, I sometimes have to pinch myself a little from time to time, because I can almost be rude about it when I say, what's new?
Yeah.
I'm always looking for that beer I haven't had before.
Yeah.
It's a quest. And the sour genre of beers right now is just wide open and exploding. So sour beers can be sour, but then you can add different types of fruit to them to get different types of sourness. So Nuglaris has long been known for its cherry and raspberry sour beers. I think in the future...
Now that sounds good.
Yeah, there you go. You mix a little bit of fruit with that sourness, and it's a whole different beer experience.
Now, you're going to criticize the beer, I think, that I had recently that had fruit mixed in it. At first, I thought, why am I doing this? But a friend gave it to me. It was a Point beer with grapefruit in it. So is that a girly thing to do or what?
Well, no. There's really, that's a, you know, that's an interesting trend as well, is that you can add fruit. The difference here in the sour beers is that the fruit is part of the whole making of the beer and part of the fermentation. So sour beers are often aged longer than the typical beers that you're seeing released on a shelf. And they're blended. Some of the fruit beers that have kind of been here today, gone tomorrow, are, you know, my general rule of thumb is I can see the fruit in the beer. It's probably not something I want. But brewers will take a wheat-based beer and they will add things like blueberries. You'll see them actually drop them in, things of that nature, to get a little bit of a sweetness to take off some of the sourness.
Yeah, and but I guess I was getting at, too, is there a sort of a trend to, it looked like it was supposed to be a summer refreshing beer, you know, kind of a summer release with a little bit of, you know, I don't know, grapefruit or something, you know, something like that in it to make it appealing on a hot summer day.
I think the grapefruit is probably one that appeals and makes it a little bit more crisp, tropical kind of, of Christmas, but it also plays off of folks that really like the bitterness in hops. There, you can get what's really a grapefruit bitterness and from certain kinds of hops, mm-hmm. and if you put grapefruit in a beer, sometimes that will accentuate that type of bitterness. And so if you're what we call a hophead, you know, a little bit of grapefruit, a little bit of citrus, maybe even there's a beer in coming out of Potosi that's made with tangerine.
Okay.
So all of that sort of amplifies or can amplify some of the bitterness, as well as that sensation that it's light and refreshing. It may or may not be light, but it generally, if you're going to put something with a tropical bitterness in it, it's going to be a little bit more of a refreshing punch, crispness.
But we only have about a minute or so before a news break, but since you brought up hop heads, there's also a trend of breweries using their own locally grown hops in making their beer?
You know, it's fascinating to see. It's almost like the return of where we were prior to Prohibition, when we had large amounts of hop fields in Wisconsin. The craft beer industry overall is really all things local sells well. And we're seeing resurgence in local hop production all across the country. But here in Wisconsin, Minnesota, it's fascinating to see small growers with small acreages forming cooperatives with a band of several like-minded hop interested people. And once a cooperative is formed, then they can really produce the amount of hops they need and give those directly to a brewery.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about the grow-your-own hops trend or the locally grown hops trend and other issues that affect the craft brew industry in Wisconsin. We are talking with Robert Shepherd. He is the Beer Here columnist for the Isthmus Newspaper of Madison, writer of the Searching for the Perfect Pint travel series of state beer books. And we're talking with him about Wisconsin beers. What's your favorite? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Life, and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are celebrating Wisconsin beers on this Independence Day, wondering if you are going to have a Wisconsin craft beer with your 4th of July picnic. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll get to more of your questions and recommendations for our guest, Robin Shepherd, the Beer Here columnist for the Isthmus Newspaper of Madison. But first, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Flags fly this week as we celebrate American independence. Writer and farmer Justin Isherwood tells us about the flags he raises above his Wisconsin farm.
It is an American thing to fly flags. I have friends who, for lack of proper ambition, are Swedes, and from their porch on holidays they fly the Swedish ensign. I have a relation who adorned their house with the Green Bay Packer flag. Down the road lives a newcomer to the community, a non-vet who, for reasons unknown, flies the MIA flag. Winter and summer he flies that black banner. I have not asked why. Perhaps I know. My mama made flags. Made them the same as Betsy Ross, a stitch at a time. She didn't use a machine because she likes sitting in her winter window, soaking up the sun and sewing a new flag. Okay, they weren't flags exactly. My mama, you see, made quilts. Made in the time-honored alluvial way out of scraps and work shirts, out of Sunday clothes and pajamas, from bed sheets, chair covers, dog blankets. For several generations, she gave away these quilts to her children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Whenever there was a new kid, there was a quilt ready for them as soon as they dried off. Every kid born to the family was soon covered with a quilt of school pants and prom dresses, morning clothes, and what was once someone's slinky pink nightie, done in folk patterns thought to ward off evil and influenza. Odd when you think about it. The same patterns on a modern yuppie quilt as an old order Amish. I have put a flagpole alongside the town road. On holidays, I raise the American flag. On Bobby Burns' birthday, I raise the flag of St. George, and when I feel like a good hymn sing, I fly the Welsh dragon. And when St. Bronislava's and St. Adalbert's have their annual picnic, I'll fly the Vatican flag, and on Hiawatha's birthday, the flag of Hudson's Bay Company, and add one for the Ojibwa Nation. But when I want to fly a flag for me in my farm, I send up one of my mama's quilts, the one made out of Sunday shirts and fertilizer bags and bib overalls, all of it stitched together in one cloth. The quilt is an honest banner for farmers, and of what we look like from about 1,500 feet up, and what we do to get on, stitch things together, whether by thread, arc welder, or baling wire. Come Memorial Day and the 4th of July, I'll fly the red, white, and blue, and on the same lanyard, hoist up a quilt, and let it weave and follow the breeze and spend the shy sound a flag has. As the local star rises, followed by the mist from the marsh, that flag, that quilt will be over us, and I will fear neither the day nor the task. The gods and angels can love us or not. We have our sign. The quilt binds our wounds and renders us bulletproof. At least, that is how it feels.
Justin Isherwood is a writer and farmer in central Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. Catch more Wisconsin Life on Wisconsin Public Television, Mondays at 8 p.m. For more information, visit our website at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy Independence Day. Wondering what Wisconsin beer you will be enjoying at your 4th of July cookout today. We are talking about some of the latest trends in the Wisconsin craft brewing business and some of the Wisconsin beer destinations you might want to put on your summer travel calendar. And we're welcoming your questions and your recommendations. What's your favorite Wisconsin beer? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk at WPR.org. We are talking with the Beer Here columnist for the Isthmus newspaper in Madison. Robin Shepherd is also the writer of the Searching for the Perfect Pint Travel series of state beer books. And Robin, we have a caller, John, in Baraboo with us. Hello, John.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, thanks for the show. Before I start, I'll just say that one of my favorites of late is probably the Bourbon Barrel Stout from Central Waters.
Yeah.
And I would love to hear your guest talk a little bit about some of the greener Wisconsin breweries, and I'll take my question off the air.
Okay, thanks. Central Waters has the reputation for being a green brewery, doesn't it, Robin?
That's right, Joy. John, probably Central Waters is one of the most well-known because of their commitment to solar energy. They have a red ale that they call Shine On, and that's sort of the beer that commemorates their commitment to the solar cells that they have there on brewery site. Another way to look at this is, breweries that use sort of the focus on green products, such as organic. Lakefront in Milwaukee has organic ESB. It's 100% organic. It's certified organic, too. And when you think about green breweries, particularly on the brewery side, when they get into organic certification, you almost have, it's like the sour side of making beer. You almost have to have separate processing that, where everything is kept separate so that, all of the base ingredients from the malts, even to the hops, were grown organically, and you can prove that or it'll pass inspection.
Briefly, do you know of this bourbon barrel brew that our caller was mentioning?
Well, I love bourbon barrel beers. They're not necessarily a beer that we often associate with summer, but bourbon barrel beers are just really quite spectacular. They're known for their wood kind of flavors, so you get that oaky and that vanilla. Mm-hmm. They're made in bourbon barrels, so you may get a little bit of that bourbony spirit accent. They're often darker beers like brown ales or porters. There's quite a sub-trade industry in used bourbon barrels, believe it or not. There's a barrel brokerage firm in Milwaukee that there's a fellow in the Madison area. They all kind of will make a pilgrimage down to the Bourbon Trail in Kentucky. And, bourbon is made in a barrel once, and so there's a lot of barrels that sort of become available. And so the craft beer industry has latched onto this, and there are brokers that will go down and load up truckloads of old used bourbon barrels and bring them back to the craft brewers, and they'll be put to use.
Cool. You know, I one time wanted to, was considering visiting the now I forgot its name, Central Waters, mm-hmm. and learned that they don't have set tours, but if you call ahead, you can get a tour. But many breweries have tours on a regular basis.
Right, and go to the websites on these breweries, and you'll find when their tours are. Some of the larger breweries, like Lakefront in Milwaukee and New Glarus, they have certain tours that you can only sign up for on the web. Mm-hmm. So I think Lakefront is one where all of their tours, you have to go in and sign up ahead of time. Beer tourism is quite a big deal. And well-known breweries have a tough time sometimes when people will go to the tour because they're just so crowded. And so it's always best to call ahead, look on the website for tour times, but it's a great way to spend a Saturday you know, the summertime when you're traveling, you're looking at places as beer destinations, find your favorite microbrewery and see if they have tour times listed. The other thing, I think that the beer pilgrims, as they are, that they're always searching for that next perfect pint. Some of the best experiences are also impromptu. One of my rules of thumb is never overplan it too much, because some of the best experiences that I've had have just simply been, I was there at the right time. My wife and I were in Iowa, in Solon, Iowa, 2 weekends ago for a wedding, and we had about 3 hours between the wedding and the reception. So what's Robin going to do? We're going to go find a brewery. So we went to a place called Big Grove, and with another couple, good friends, and we were having lunch. And the next thing we know, we find ourselves, just the four of us, on a little tour of that very small brew house. In a very small town, a very small community. But you see the sparkle come on in the eyes of a brewmaster there when the tour starts, or when it's a small tour like that. You get to feel the passion in why they are brewmasters and why they do what they do and what their favorite beers are and what they're thinking about over the summer months, or maybe even the winter months, what they're planning.
What are some of the new summer crop of Wisconsin craft beers?
Well, now's a great time. That, I think probably I seem to recall that the 4th of July is one of the biggest beer consumption days.
Yeah, I bet.
So a lot of brewers were sort of gearing up for June and July, and you have to think about, for them, many of the beers that we're seeing right now were on the drawing boards months ago, probably were initially brewed in March, April, and May. So the trends right now that I think you see statewide are lighter, it's a commitment to what are called session beers, and these are beers that you can have one or two. They're lower in alcohol, but they're flavorful. So they're a new twist on the light beer adage of taste great, less filling, to borrow a phrase from a bigger brewery. But it's the idea that at a session, you've got a lighter beer, one that doesn't fill you up, one that doesn't overwhelm you with its strength. And so we're seeing beers like that are coming out right now, the white India Pale Ales, the Session India Pale Ales. Those are normally very hoppy, very intensely bitter beers, but they're backed off a little bit in body so that you could drink more than one at a time. Lake Louie in Arena, Wisconsin, has revamped his lineup recently and kind of dusted off his so-called portfolio of beers, and he has what he calls a session series, and those are those very flavorful but not quite as strong beers. He has a series of beers that he's unveiled called his Hop-a-Louie series, and those are targeted right at the hop heads, those people who have that quest for bitterness. And then he has a series called Dark Shadows, which are the darker beers. And if you think about what summer drinking is about, it's usually hot, and you're looking for something that has some thirst-quenching components to it. So you see the lighter, crisper, mid-range hoppy kinds of beers that are emerging that fit the bill of the summer.
Just so, in order to be lighter, it has to be hoppy?
No, not necessarily. The hops are simply, that's going to give it a lot more flavor. So the hops are the bitterness, and the bitter is like that wave we're talking about, sour beers. There is the most popular, the biggest growth in styles right now, or I guess the purchase power right now in the craft industry, is really focused on hoppy beers. And the people that really like these beers, they gravitate to things that are called India Pale Ales. These were beers that sort of came out of the 1700s, 1800s, where they figured out that hops was a preservative, and so the more hops you put in, the better the beer was preserved, but it also made the beer more bitter. And so you had distinct styles that emerged, like pale ales and India Pale Ales. And in all things aggressive and assertive in the American craft industry, we have Imperial Pale Ales now that are another level of hoppiness altogether. And oftentimes when you get into those bigger beers, brewers are using a lot more fermentable sugars or malts, so you get higher alcohol. So the trend in session beers is to back off on the alcohol, the body, the mouthfeel of the beer, so it's not as cloying on the palate. You feel more of the crisp, clean sensations, and a little bit of hops really helps make it taste clean. A lot of hops, though, will go the other way, and it will be almost become cloying on the palate.
We are talking about hoppy beers and sour beers and favorite beers on this 4th of July, talking about the Wisconsin craft beers that we enjoy. Maybe we will have one of them today on the 4th of July, or two, or three. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I've been to Edgerton, Darlington, Middleton, Hubbleton, Hub City, Cuba City, Genoa City, Ashburn, Ashland, Packwaukee, Pewaukee, Waukesha, Conemaugh, Wapaka, Milwaukee, Wausau, Wauwatosa, Waupun, Watertown, Waterloo, Whitewater, Whitefish, State Manor, Wishwater's Climate.
I've been over there. Hey, smell that dairy air. Hey.
This is a Wisconsin craft beer edition of Tell Joy Where to Go. I'm Joy Cardine, along with Robin Shepherd, who writes the Beer Here column for the Isthmus newspaper in Madison. He also is the writer of the Searching for the Perfect Pint travel series. And we're welcoming your questions for him about Wisconsin craft beers. And we are welcoming your own recommendations and your own favorites. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We have some callers now, so let's go to Paul in Madison next. Hello, Paul.
Good morning to you both, and happy 4th of July.
Yes, you too.
Thank you. Look, since your guest gave a plug to Potosi, I'd like to give a plug to their Snake Hollow Ale, which I think is a pretty damn good IPA, if I do say so myself. I tried to turn my friends on to it, and they all go, blah, 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 when they try it. So I guess it's an acquired taste. But talking about the 4th of July, I can remember, I'm not a native son of Wisconsin, but I do remember back to cookouts with the neighborhood and the big galvanized troughs with tons of ice purchased from an ice maker, and cans of Ballantine Ale being floating in there. That brings back a lot of memories.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing. And what's the blah about Snake Hollow Ale, Robin?
Well, that fits into that whole hophead mindset of bitter beers. It's an India Pale Ale, and it's actually Snake Hollow IPA, India Pale Ale, I believe is their number one seller out of that brewery. There are a lot of people who love that taste of bitterness, and that's one that if you happen to be over at the brewery, that's the one that's actually made with tangerine. So it's a tangerine IPA. There's the main IPA, Snake Hollow, and then there's a special version that they make with, it's infused with tangerine juice.
Good. Linda writes on Facebook, you know, she says, go to New Glarus Brewery, Spotted Cow Land. We talked about their new line of sour beers, but that's a place to be put on our summer travel destinations?
Oh, I think so. I mean, New Glarus has self-guided tours, so you can go and you can just walk through the brewery on your own. Then they have what are called the hard hat tours, where that will take you into the depths of the brewery, and I believe those are narrated with a staff person. But the hard hat tours, as I recall, you have to sign up for ahead of time.
Yeah. Boy, that Spotted Cow really took off, didn't it?
Well, you know, breweries, you'll find that breweries every now and then will hit on a major, what's called a flagship, the beer that they're known for. And clearly Spotted Cow has done that for New Glarus. But New Glarus, most folks familiar with that company will know that it's a broader portfolio. We may know it as Spotted Cow, but it's a brewery that turns out probably 16 to 20 beers in a year. It's quite extensive in terms of what they actually do. But there are other breweries that, you know, you can kind of point your finger at as you go around the state and think about, well, what is their flagship? What are they really known for? That gets you in the door, gets them in your refrigerator. And then it's the broader part of their portfolio that really kind of keeps you coming back to them. Lake Louis, what we talked about earlier, one of their flagships or best seller is Warp Speed Scotch Ale. That's one that sort of just took off for Tom Porter, but he has quite a portfolio behind that beer as well.
Yeah, and you wrote recently that Door County is trying to, I guess, market or beef up its reputation as a craft brewing land.
Yeah, it's fun to watch sort of beer destinations, either get enhanced or expand or be created. And Door County is one of the sort of blossoming places in the state. We think of it as sort of cherries mm-hmm. and apples and wines. A number of things have happened there. There's some new breweries that are kind of cropping up. The Door County Brewing Company started about a year ago as a contract-made beer. They're having someone else make their beer for them, but they recently opened up a brewery in Bailey's Harbor. The Door County Beer Festival brings a lot of people in and introduces kind of craft beer to the area, or reinforces that it's a destination for good craft beer. There is that festival was recently held in Bailey's Harbor, but there's another festival that comes up in September in Egg Harbor, the Egg Harbor Ale Fest. And then you see the sort of the spinoff culture happen, too, when the local economic development side understands that there is a lot of folks
there's
that appreciate
tourism to be had here.
Tourism to be had and a lot of beer drinkers to serve. You see a secondary industry that all of a sudden explodes in the way of specialty beer bars and tap houses that cater to the beer drinker.
Well, now, of course, our lines are full. Let's try to clip through as many as we can here. Bruce in Rice Lake. Hi, Bruce.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone listening. My question is, is there a good-tasting non-alcohol or very low-alcohol beer made? I mean, I like beer, but I don't like hangovers.
Do the craft breweries make a non-alcohol
beer? It's a tricky thing to make, as you would imagine. I mean, where you get the taste, and you're gonna ferment it, and then you're gonna take the alcohol out. And I don't have a great recommendation, as you might imagine. That's not the beer that I would normally gravitate to, but I think there's a Klosterhausen, I think, is one that kind of crops to mind. It's an imported version.
We have, because we have so short on time, I think we can take Tom in Madison. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I'd like to recommend a trip to the Angry Minnow Brew Pub in Hayward, Wisconsin. If you buy 5-4 packs, your sixth is free.
All right, Tom, that's pretty good marketing that you're doing there, too. But tell me about the Angry Minnow in less than 30 seconds.
Oh, well, it's part of actually a great, it's almost a loop that you can do. If you think about it, go to Eau Claire, then you go up the road to Hayward and visit the Angry Minnow. Go up to Duluth Superior. Duluth Superior is one of those beer destinations that's exploding with new small breweries right now. Then cross back over on Highway 2, visit South Shore in Ashland, and then come right straight back down 39, and you'll stop in Minocqua. Wausau has three breweries now, and then you have to stop in Stevens Point just from the historical value of the Stevens Point Brewery, another longtime brewery there. I mean, if you think about what breweries meant in the early 1800s and when they got started. Here's a brewery that came in and they named the streets perfectly. They're at the intersection of Beer and Water Street.
Very good.
That's
been there.
Civic power.
Yeah. Robin, thank you so much for being here. Have a happy 4th of July.
Same to you, Joy.
Robin Shepherd is the Beer Here columnist for the Isthmus newspaper in Madison. Thanks to Robin Cherry for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.